honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, familiarizing you today with the work of the Best Defense Foundation, one of a growing number of nonprofits committed to making sure our veterans know how much they're valued. You heard from the founder of that foundation, former NFL All-Pro linebacker Donnie Edwards. Now let's hear from one of the veterans he talked about, the indefatigable Tom Rice, now 98 years old. And if you haven't heard Tom's World War II story on Hometown Heroes, I encourage you to go back and listen to his original appearance in our archives online. A paratrooper with the 101st Airborne, he jumped into Normandy, survived the Battle of the Bulge, but in between experienced intense fighting in the Netherlands as part of Operation Market Garden. That's why he's headed back to Holland for the 75th anniversary next week. But let's start out, Tom, by getting a little reaction from you about that trip you just made to France in June for D-Day's 75th anniversary.
Oh, it was amazing. I just cannot thank enough people for all of the things they've been doing, trying to do, and did do for us. Everywhere we turned, it was a reenactment for the most part. We drove in a Jeep up Carentan Main Boulevard, and there must have been 30,000 people, 10 deep on each side of the road. And then they delivered me to the grandstand, and I met the commanding United States military four-star general who commands all of the American forces in Europe. And next to him was the commanding general, two-star general of the 101st Airborne. So they put me in between, and Brenda was really cute about it. She wanted the general to move over and so she could take a picture. She was maneuvering the generals around like they'd never been moved before. So it was travel thither and yon, and at La Barquette Locks, a scene took place. There must have been 150 reenactors there, and guys were standing all over the locks, all over the causeway. There must have been 500 people there crowding in. A lady came up. She was the granddaughter of Sam Glenn, who was a 504 parachute infantry, as best I can figure now. She had his All-American 82nd Airborne patch and showed me, and she had been holding it for 35 years because her grandfather, Sam Glenn, wanted her to give it to some GI and have it jumped on a 75th. So she came to the right place at the right time, and she was crying like you just couldn't believe. So she told me the story, and then she walked away, and then she came back and crying even more. So that must have been 150 people right close by that were all crying. It was the most emotional scene I've ever been into in my life, and that is a story to be retold in itself. So the museum thought they had the right of possession of the AA patch, 82nd Airborne, and they wanted it surrendered to them, and I refused to do it. So I gave it to a Belgique historian who's doing some writing, and he's going to research the whole thing, and it's going to be on display when and where he's ready. So that's just the opening of a fabulous day-by-day activity that went on. It was the mayor of Carentan when I jumped. Did you see the photographs of that jump?
Yes.
Okay, we had, somebody says we had a hard landing, but I don't believe it. But the mayor rushed out, and he's my best friend, and he said to the historian who's previewing the jump that this is the most emotional time I've ever had in my life, he said. And so that's the way. That was just two or three incidents that took place. So going back was a good way to end up a closure. While we're trained in Camp Dakota, Georgia, most of our officers on the battalion level were West Pointers, and they threw chaos at us every single day. And they had something in mind, and the idea was to force us to approach fear in a manner in which we could dissect it and take it apart, tear apart fear, and then develop some courage that will ameliorate or get rid of the fear. So we had a lot of that to do. For instance, we jumped off a dam and into the water and full field pack and rifle, and if you lost your rifle, you were in deep trouble. There was some, the 506 went through a activity that Colonel Sink had pig entrails and pig heads and all kinds of pig parts spread around in the area, and the guys had to crawl through that. The 501 didn't have to do that because it didn't have any more pigs, but that's some of the things that we did. So we developed a method of facing a chaotic situation by reducing it to a danger, and then tuck that method back in the convoluted areas of our mind where men seldom go, and we faced another danger maybe a week or so or the next day, who knows, and reduce that danger to an inconvenience. Do the same thing, and pretty soon we bundled up a lot of courage that hopefully ended up in bravery when we did face an enemy. We could spit in his eye and get even with him. So those things went on, and it worked for me because in Holland, the Germans were coming over the dike into an orchard, and A Company and B Company were at one of the long ends of the orchard, and C Company, we got around behind them, and a flare went up about 150 feet in the air and about 100 yards from me, and it was over the apple orchard, and the orchard was for the most part unattended for a long period of time, and our trees were rotted, and I got caught right on the top of a barbed wire fence. So I just froze there with my arms sticking out and pretended to be an old rotted apple tree. I'm sure they saw me, but I hope that they thought I was an apple tree. And it happened a second time when I took out a patrol in Bass Stone. We came to a fork in the road, and I had two scouts with me and a couple of guys behind. And they were trying to hurry up to catch up, and were slowed down by barbed wire fences that marked off this downslope into corrals for animals. So it was seesaw a little bit there. So I sent one guy by the name of John Thomas up the a left fork of the road, and he was tracking through the ice, and I noticed 50 yards ahead of him, John Thomas, was the machine guns were hitting into the ditch in which he was crawling. So it appeared to me the Germans were not going to shoot at him because they were just trying to get the range that we would be within that ditch, and all of us sooner or later would crawl up that ditch because John Thomas was there. I saw that, so I told the scout right next to me, Art Texier, to call John Thomas back, and we sent him up the right fork of the road. Well, in the meantime, I was down very low, and my knee looked like my head, and this was a telescopic activity by a German sniper at about 450 yards in a building about 3 to 5 stories high and about 8 or 9 windows in it, and he was back in there where he couldn't be seen. So we were under observation. He fired one shot, thinking my knee was my head, but it did hit my knee just above the kneecap, and it was bleeding, just nicked the artery. And so I knew I was hit, so I told Texier to give me a shot of morphine, because Lieutenant Bonelli gave me 18 syringes of morphine in case any problem developed. So he gave me a shot, and I told him to go on back in, take the rest of the guys in, the patrol's over. So I'm here by myself, and I had to get up to test that leg to see if it was broken. So when I did, I stood up, took one step with my right foot, and my right arm came up at about parallel to my ear, and another shot was fired. That hit me in the right arm radius. That took out about 6 inches of bone. My helmet came off, and my submachine gun dropped, and I dove for the haystack right across the street. But before I did that, the sniper reloaded real quick, or there was a second sniper with him, and the third shot went right by my ear. Now, I was up there maneuvering my head right and left and my arms up and down and my body in all different directions so he couldn't get a good telescopic view of me, and it worked. That's why I'm here today, because I did that and because of the officers who taught us how to do that and the meaning of that to manufacture as much courage as possible. Bundle it up and tuck it in the back end of your mind and turn it into bravery when you need to. You could call upon it. So I did, and here I am.
Yeah, here you are, and there you go again. You're going back to the Netherlands to mark the 75th anniversary of Operation Market Garden. Now, in the D-Day's 75th anniversary, we saw you everywhere. You're on the NBC Nightly News. You're on other broadcasts. I know they're doing a documentary about that. But so often people don't hear or don't know enough about what you guys did in the Netherlands this time of year in 1944. What are you hoping to accomplish by going back there and jumping out of yet another airplane?
I was at a Chino air show and signing documents, and a lady came up and she asked me somewhat the same question. What did you Americans expect to accomplish when you came to Europe? Well, I put my pen down and put my arm on the deck there, and I told her, lady, when the Germans came, they came with the bell rungs. When we came with rifles, grenades, artillery, and everything you can imagine. The second time we came with the Bill of Rights, and we restored life, liberty, and property back to the French nation so that they could live the way they had lived before, hopefully. All of those incidents that I just explained and mentioned to you were closures for me. So I had a lot of closures to accomplish, and Donnie Edwards and his organization, Honor Flight, and the Greatest Generation have given me an opportunity by returning to Europe 6 and 7 times to close down some of these issues, meet the people, for the most part, that wanted to talk to me, shake hands, give them a hug, and come home safe.
Donnie Edwards said that your plan is to continue jumping until you're 101 years old, and you're only 3 years away from that.
I'm going to stick with it. The trips back to Europe are getting pretty intense, you know, and they want to extend them, and there's a lot of distance to travel there, so we may have to cut back a little bit on that, but I can jump here east of Chula Vista, East Lake. I know the people there, so they'll let me jump with them. We'll go to 13,000 feet and bail out and open up at 6,000 and float around and enjoy the ride.
The first time I met you, you told me that jumping is your way of honoring all your fellow paratroopers, and especially those who didn't come home, and that was the best way you knew how. Now that you've been doing it so long, I mean, 7 or 8 years you've been doing these jumps in your 90s now, what's the best thing or the most satisfying or rewarding, fulfilling thing that has come out of that for you?
The reaction of the French, they are so absolutely super perfect as patriots. They know what we did, how we did it, and when we went in, they understood we were always surrounded. You know, they helped us wherever they could to destroy the enemy, and so they were super people. They want to reinvest some of their energy into us by meeting us and shaking hands, taking us throughout the country wherever we go. I jumped at Montpellier 2 years ago at 13,000, they closed the airport. No incoming traffic, no airplanes coming or going. Yeah, we jumped at 13,000, and we had a great time there. We did the jumping to honor those guys that, for the most part, were killed, captured. For the life of me, I can't accept that they gave their life away. That's a lot of baloney. They had it taken. So the American public has got to reinvest some of their interest in what happened to these guys and how it happened, and more information has got to be released. So you hopefully that there's enough of them still around. I think only maybe 3% that can still talk. So I do what I can to honor these guys that didn't come back, that were captured, were killed, who walked away, who didn't want any more to do with it, didn't even want to see a gun, etc., and honor them. I did that in a dedication to my book called Trial by Combat. And the book has been published in Sweden, so they're going to have a look at it also. Maybe we can get it published in French. I don't know, but we'll see. But that's my goal, and who knows what'll happen. Life goes on at its petty pace from day to day till the last syllables are recorded time. I was a teacher for 44 years. I was an athlete for 51 years and wore out both knees. My last one, I was a soldier for 4 years. And so we've explored the soldiering. We've explored the running and explored everything else that's possible. So I figure I've got about 795 days left.
Well, that'll get you to 101, huh?
Yeah, hopefully that'll get me to 101. So I got some competition out there. There's a lady who's 104. I don't know if she's probably got one or two jumps in, but she's an old gal, and they took her away in a wheelchair afterwards. She wasn't injured or not, but she's kind of confined there. And there's another fellow in Australia who is 102, and he's got a couple jumps. So I got some competition in front of me.
Well, 101 was a good number for you during the war, so
yeah,
trust that
would
be
right.
A good number for you again.
I'm not going to sit in a chair and rock to sleep and be stoned to death, so I'm still moving.
Yeah.
Still vertical and still breathing. So I'll conclude with saying pain makes man think, thought makes man wise, and wisdom makes life endurable.
98 years worth of wisdom and counting for Tom Rice. Keep an eye out for him jumping again in the Netherlands next week. That trip with Donnie Edwards and the Best Defense Foundation will also take him to Hitler's famed Eagle's Nest hideaway in Berchtesgaden, another place he visited under very different circumstances 75 years ago. You can stay up to date with Tom and the other veterans on that journey by following the Best Defense Foundation on your favorite social media platforms. The website is bestdefensefoundation.org, and of course I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. That's all the time we have today, but thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.